From 12 News, this is Newsmakers.
Rhode Islanders almost never give their governor strong job approval ratings, and as he prepares to seek re-election next year, Dan McKee is no exception.
You know, the polls come and go.
What does the governor's campaign team need to do if he wants to win again? Plus, does second-term Democrat Seth Magaziner have reason to worry in the 2nd Congressional District? This week on Newsmakers, we'll tackle those topics and much more with our political roundtable.
Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White, alongside 12 News Politics editor Ted Nisi. And for this political roundtable, we welcome back Joe Fleming, 12 News political analyst, and from the Boston Globe, Steph Machado. Hello, everyone.
Thanks
having
for
a good
us.
Summer so
yep.
far?
Yes.
Great. All right, let's start with the survey by Salve Regina University's Pell Center. They released it earlier this month, right? 2 weeks ago, I think? Or was it last
that sounds
week?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, the poll was not great for Governor Dan McKee. We'll bring up some numbers here. 804 voters said that, well, 25% of 804 voters approve of McKee's job performance, down from 36% in the same survey a year ago, but a whopping 64% disapprove of his job performance so far. 10% aren't sure. As I like to do, I want to go around the table. You all read the poll. You have it in front of you. When it comes to the governor's numbers here, I want to focus on that. I'll give you two options. Either what stood out to you or what do you think is behind it? Go ahead.
Well, what stood out to me is it's quite low. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is, you know, the problem for the governor is in most polls, though not all, as we'll talk about later in the show, he's slipped from Gina Raimondo territory to Lincoln Chafee territory, which is a, with all due respect to Rhode Island's former governor, a zone you do not want to be in politically, and it's why Lincoln Chafee couldn't run again. And so the governor, if he really wants to be competitive next year, really needs to show more signs that he's getting himself back into at least Gina Raimondo's unpopular but not super unpopular territory, which is a zone you can win as a Democrat in Rhode Island.
Joe?
Well, I agree with Ted, but we haven't seen that yet. We've been talking about this for a couple of years that the governor needs to move his numbers up, but the communication has not been there. The big thing with this poll is simply among Democrats, 42% have a favorable approval of his job rating. That number is not the greatest if you're a Democrat and you're thinking, I got a primary. Right now, the main race for the governor is
an incumbent Democrat.
An incumbent Democrat. And his main point right now is a Democratic primary, not a Republican in the general election, because there's no Republican who have announced. He has Helena Folks standing there, and 42% in a head-to-head race is not the greatest. And keep in mind, these might not be primary voter Democrats. This is just general Democrats. The primary voters is a smaller number.
And just before Steph jumps in, sure. On that Democratic number, to help people understand why we're focused on it, the governor's at like 42% approval of Democrats. Senator Reid and Whitehouse are at like 80%.
Okay.
So that just shows you,
yep.
Within your own party, you're usually very strong.
Good context. Steph?
Well, I noted that they were in the field on this poll 10 days after we found out that the Washington Bridge isn't going to open until 2028. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, even though we kind of knew it was clearly not going to open in 2026, I mean, to hear the end of 2028, if it finishes on time, I think was probably very unpopular. And that was probably on people's minds when they were getting these phone calls.
And they did poll the Washington Bridge number, which we'll get to in a second. But before we bring that up, you know, look, we're talking about this, and maybe our viewers at home are like everybody, Election Day is 15 months away. Right?
So much can happen.
So much can happen. Is that enough runway, Joe, for the governor to turn this thing around?
It is enough runway, but he has to start doing it quickly. As I said, the last couple of years we thought he was going to try to start turning things around, but nothing has turned around at this point. The question is, can he make things turn around? I mean, he said he wasn't signing the budget because it had tax increases in it. Maybe that's the beginning of him trying to turn things around. But we'll have to see over the next couple months. Once we get to January, you're in the total election season. So if he's going to make a move, he needs to start doing it right now.
The other interesting thing with Governor McKee that you've seen is, you know, many Democratic governors, Maura Healey certainly in Mass, have been effectively running against Donald Trump, you know, spending months telling Democrats in their states and Democratic-leaning independents, I'm fighting Trump, I'm mad at Trump, here's what he did to us today, et cetera. Dan McKee has not taken that approach for the most part. Generally, he has shied away from any any open conflict with Trump if he can avoid it. That's starting to change. He's starting to put out more statements, and my sense is that his new campaign team that he's bringing on is saying you've got to bond more with Democratic voters, who the number one thing they're upset about is Donald Trump, and they don't see you out there fighting.
Look at Arona's numbers. He's the most popular statewide office holder in the poll, right? Yeah, and he's been beating the drum about Trump since
Susan
January
every
20th.
Day, it feels like.
Yeah. Susan every other day, right?
And we'll have Narona's numbers later in this program. But the other voice I can hear coming through the screen right now is Governor McKee's campaign manager, and he's going, why aren't you talking about the other poll? Why aren't you talking about Morning Consult, which is, to be fair, a more recent poll, right,
in terms of... No, because it was finished June 30th.
Well, and it's also weird. Morning Consult is in the field, what, for like 3 months?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Yep.
Yes. So, and we don't have to get all into the weeds on all of that, but in that poll, it shows his job approval number at 45%, which is a lot higher the last time I checked than 25% in the Pell poll. I think Globe columnist Dan McGowan called it a polar coaster, which I liked, trademark. Joe, what are people, you know, they're at home and they're going, all right, wait, so 25%, there was another poll that had him at like 19%, I think, right. And now 45%. The polls are everywhere. What am I to make of it?
Well, as I've always said, Tim, poll is nothing more than a snapshot of when it's taken. That Morning Consult poll was done over a three-month period. So
that's a long exposure.
It's a very long exposure.
Snapshot, you know, yeah.
And a lot of things can happen during that time. However, I think the way you got to look at all these polls is take the average of all the polls, not just any one poll. And if we take the average of all the polls and include the Morning Consult, the governor's numbers are still in probably the low 30s, which is not a good position to be in at this point. And again, you have to see how he's doing among Democrats, because that's the key thing right now. It looks like a Democratic primary unless the Republicans come up with a strong candidate for governor within the next few months.
I want to weigh in that, too, because I think it's a very valid thing for McKee supporters to say. Like, why so much attention on the polls where he's lower when there's this 45% number? And I think, first of all, I think it's important to at least listen to that 45% Morning Consult is getting, because we've seen polling is getting harder. Sometimes the outlier poll is the right one, and the ones that are similar are actually all wrong together, right? But that said, usually best practice, as Joe just did, is to average all the polls coming out together. And what you've had in the last four polls in recent weeks for the governor was 19%, 23%, I believe it's 23, 25%, and 45%. Right. So that's why the 45 is there. We should think about it, but we also have to acknowledge three of the four had him in that zone of 19 to 25.
If you look at national polls right now for president, job approval with Donald Trump, I've seen a couple where his disapproval was a plus 14, and I've seen polls where his approval was a plus 2. So they're all over the place also. The thing with polling is a lot of it depends on how you draw your sample, what's happening during the time you're polling. As you said, Steph, you know, they announced the bridge isn't going to open. That could influence what goes on.
All right, so why don't we talk about the bridge, since you brought it up, and to my friends in the control room, let's bring up the Washington Bridge numbers if we can do that. The poll finds a whopping 84% of voters think it is unlikely that the bridge will be completed by November of 2028, which, Steph, as you said, was the announcement just a couple of weeks before they were in the field, at a cost of $427 million, with 59% describing that outcome as not likely at all. Only 2% of voters think it is very likely. So you put them all together, 14% likely, 84% unlikely, and 3% are unsure. That's a really low unsure. People have made up their mind.
I would say, you can't get 84% of Americans to agree on anything these days.
More so Rhode Islanders. So, Steph, again, to your point earlier, is this the anchor around the governor's neck?
I think
almost
so.
Entirely?
I think so. And I even think their estimate was fairly conservative. I mean, that's 5 years after the bridge closed that they're estimating that it's going to reopen. You know, he will, presumably, in 2026, have a groundbreaking on starting to build the new bridge, which could be positive for him. But it also just will put it back in the news that this thing is not reopening for another two and a half years, depending on when they do the groundbreaking. So I think it's going to be a constant issue in the race. It's giving a lot of opportunity for opponents to criticize him. And fairly, I mean, he's admitted himself that his initial reaction to the bridge was not great. He's apologized for underestimating how much it has harmed Rhode Islanders. And so it's an issue that he knows is vulnerable for him.
That's a good point, too, though, that, like, sometimes even if you are presenting positive news. If it's a bad topic for you, just the fact, as you say, Steph, that it's in the news is bad for Damon. So is it that any mention of the Washington Bridge, even if he's saying we've made a little progress, just makes people annoyed again at the whole situation?
I think so. Short of the cutting the ribbon and reopening right. the lanes, I think so.
Real quick, 30 seconds.
I think the bridge is a gift that keeps on giving for his opponents. Mm. They keep bringing it up, and it's had the negatives. Why should people believe that it's going to be done in 28 when all the other dates they've given have not worked out? So I think that's why the people are very skeptical about the bridge.
All right. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, should Seth Magaziner be losing sleep? We have some numbers to show you. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White. This is Ted Nesi, a political roundtable this week with 12 News political analyst Joe Fleming and from the Boston Globe, Steph Machado. We're talking about primarily a poll put out by Salve's, the Pell Center. And I want to go to the 2nd Congressional District and pull up some job approval numbers for Congressman Seth Magaziner. He is the only member of the congressional delegation with a net negative job approval rating in this poll. Among 2nd District voters, only 40% approve of Magaziner's job performance, while 46% disapprove. Should note that a year ago, I think, what was it, Ted, 51 and 31?
Significantly better, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot better there, and 14% in this poll say they are unsure. Joe and Ted, Joe, I guess start with you. Is he vulnerable?
I'm not really sure. I mean, these numbers are not great for him. However, when you look at the inside numbers, among Democrats, 71%. So obviously, in a primary, he still looks in a very good position. Independent voters, 36-44. Those aren't bad numbers. If you get a strong Democratic base and you hold on to the independents fairly close to even, you're in good shape. And the other question is, you need somebody to run against him who has some name recognition, who has some money. I haven't seen that up to this point. So he's in a good position in the sense that we're getting closer to the election, and there's no opponent that has come forward.
I remember there was an article a number of years ago now that said 40% is the new 50% for politicians in this polarized era, that like it's just very hard to get even majority support because things are so partisan. And, you know, if Democrats like you as a Democrat, that almost certainly means Republicans are mad at you because you did things that Democrats like. Mm-hmm. And so I do think we've learned in recent years that your approval rating, if you're a Democrat in round, can get pretty low, and you still can find a path to re-election because in the end, a lot of Democrats, even some who are mad at you for something, might vote for you in the end. But I should say, I do still think he should, and from people I've talked to, his team is taking this seriously, that they'd prefer to be more popular. And, you know, it's a little embarrassing in the delegation to be the one who's unpopular.
I suppose the other thing that is working in his favor is, you know, he's every 2 years for U.S. reps. He's up in 2026. The midterm election could be pretty good, maybe, for Democrats. That's a conventional wisdom there. And so, unlike McKee, we're not talking, and maybe it's too early to say, we're not really talking about a primary here in CD2.
No.
We're more focused on the general election. Mm-hmm. And so that could help him. Could we, just to put this in context, before we go to the lieutenant governor, is there any way we can bring up Jack Reed's job performance numbers? Because, Ted, you made the good point in the first half of the program about, we don't have Jack Reed. Okay, I'll just say it. Thank you for telling me that. I'll just say that out loud. I don't know. Do I even have Reed? I do. 50% approve of Jack Reed with only 39% of voters disapproving. My take on that was, and while he's always sort of the bellwether and up high, that's actually low for
that,
Reed, isn't
that
it?
That is very low for Jack Reed. I've been polling Jack Reed for many, many years. At one point, he was in the mid-60s. Mm. But usually now, you get him around 58-59%. So this 50% is low. But again, all the numbers in this poll seem to be lower for elected officials. But again, when you get to the state office holders, those numbers are probably what you normally get, because 40-50% couldn't answer the question. But Jack Reed numbers, no question, Tim, is low right now.
And briefly, the thing with Reed that I noticed, and I think what you're seeing here to what we were talking about is, you know, Jack Reed, why has Jack Reed always been popular? Because historically, he's done a bit better with independents and Republicans than a different Democrat. He's had a different brand, military, the things we think of Jack Reed. I think we're getting to a point, and Jack Reed's been so outspoken about the second Trump administration, that he's losing some of that more nonpartisan, above it all sheen in this era. And so it's not that Democrats are mad at Jack Reed, it's that he's losing some of that residual support he'd had that a Sheldon Whitehouse has never had with a couple Republicans and independents.
Excellent point. All right, let's talk about Lieutenant Governor Sabina Matos now and bring up her job approval rating in the Pell Center poll. And as you can see, 39% approve. She has a disapprove of 21. That seems.
This is Democrats.
This is Democrats. Yeah. Okay, because I have the overall 23-46 disapprove. So these are the Democratic numbers: approval rating of 39 and 21%. You know, Steph, you covered her when she, you know, in her congressional race. And do you think those numbers reflect her job as lieutenant governor or on the nomination paper signature problem that derailed her congressional bid?
I think it's the latter. I think the lieutenant governor is not a super visible statewide office holder. And so if the thing you have heard about Sabina Matos on the news over the past couple of years is this,
to your point, 31%
scandal.
Of people don't have an opinion of her job approval.
She ran for Congress pretty quickly after winning a full term to lieutenant governor, and it was very unsuccessful running for Congress. What I think is interesting about that race, and because she's the most vulnerable statewide office holder, like everyone and their mom is considering running for lieutenant governor. You know, we have one declared candidate, which is Cindy Coyne, right?
The cold case investigator from Smithfield's running.
Got it.
Too.
And then, that's right. And then Matos herself has said she's going to run. She did well in Providence in her 2022 Democratic primary, where two state lawmakers were challenging her. But now there's a Providence city councilor, Sue Anderbois, who's considering running. I don't know if she's going to get in the race or not. She only has 2 years' experience as an elected official, but she was a state government worker before that. She is popular on the east side, which is where most of the votes are in Providence. And so I think Sabina Matos needs Providence to win a primary. And if she has a credible challenger in Providence, that could hurt her. It doesn't mean I think Anderbois is going to win the race or anything like that. It's interesting to see the people who are jumping in and what effect they could have on the incumbent.
With these numbers, she's in the same position as Deanne McKee. The more candidates in the race, the better for her.
Yeah.
You know, if she can get 25-30% of the vote in a five-candidate race, she can win it. But if it's a head-to-head race, I think she has some serious problems because only 39% of Democrats approve of the job that she's doing. And again, as Steph just said, all these general office holders, people don't really have a good image of them because they're not in the news all the time.
And I just wonder, Tim, too, briefly before we go to break, what kind of mood are Democratic primary voters going to be in August and September of 2026? Because we know there's a lot of frustration among Democrats right now and a feeling that the incumbents who get reelected over and over aren't doing their jobs. Sabina Matos is not the reason Donald Trump's doing X, Y, Z, but could there be spillover just if there's frustration in the electorate? We don't know yet.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll deliver on the promise. We're going to talk about probably the most well-known state office holder next to the governor, Attorney General Peter Noronha. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White with Ted Nisi, a political roundtable this week looking at the Pell Center's most recent poll. We're joined by the Globe's Steph Machado and the Dean of Political Analysts, Joe Fleming. All right, Attorney General Peter Noronha, I mean, outside the governor, he's the best-known general officer in the state, according to the poll. We'll bring up his job approval numbers now. It's split. 38% approve, 37% disapprove, 25% aren't sure. But despite that double-digit unsure number, as I said, he's got high name recognition and stuff. That checks out, right? I mean, he's been really active.
He's been really visible. There's been a ton of lawsuits against the Trump administration, and a lot of them have been filed in Rhode Island. So Noronha's office is raising their hand every single time 25 states are getting together to file a lawsuit. A lot of them are being filed in Rhode Island, so his office is very busy. People seem to be thanking him for it. I went to a town hall that Congressman Amo was hosting, and I didn't realize Noronha was up there on the stage with him, and people were like, they run for governor. I mean, like, I do think that some amount of people are noticing that and are happy about it on the Democratic side.
What are you
obviously
looking for, Ted, from him? As he's, considering a run for governor, because I just, it's sort of like,
well, he's been Rhode Island's Hamlet, to be or not to be. I told him that when I saw him the other day when he was on with Kim on 12 News at 4. I guess he, at some point, you are getting the point, you have to switch out of the flirtation and the public mauling.
When does he get to do it?
I think this summer. I think he needs, if he wants to raise real money. Because the thing is, put Dan McKee to the side for a second. If Peter Noronha is going to run, so is Helena Folks, whether Dan McKee's in the race or not. And Helena Folks is going to have a lot of money. And so Peter Norona, I don't think he needs as much money as Helena Foulkes to be competitive, since he's a statewide office holder. He has a story to tell. But he's certainly going to want to raise the money to tell his own story, to get out there, particularly if we're in a three-candidate race, because we don't think Dan McKee is going anywhere.
Right.
So I just think, and even putting together the campaign apparatus, trying to see, can he neutralize any unions if he and the governor are both in the race? Things like that. You don't want to wait too long, I would think, at least to be putting things in motion behind the scenes.
You want to weigh in, Joe?
Well, I was going to say, keep in mind, 25% of the people still don't know who he is, because he didn't answer the question. But Ted's 100% correct. He needs to get going right now. He has to raise money. It's not as easy as you think sometimes. You know, you're going to need, in a Democratic primary, a couple $1 million probably, because that could be the main race in this campaign. So if he's going to run, he has to make a decision probably in the next couple months.
I do think there's also an element of suspended animation around the governor's race, where there is just, we all know, we all talk to people right around the statehouse and around politics. There remains a bit of a disbelief that Dan McKee is definitely going to be a candidate for governor in September 2026 when these numbers come out, morning consult aside. Dan McKee is doing his best to dissuade everyone of that. He says, I'm running, I'm hiring people, I'm raising money, and you guys know I'm competitive. But I still don't think he has convinced sort of the gang of 500 in Rhode Island politics. And yeah, I think people are kind of waiting to feel, it reminds me with Biden, where people, remember Nancy Pelosi? We're waiting for Biden to decide, even though Biden said he decided. People just aren't convinced yet. And I think Dan McKee will have to be pretty clearly running in the fall for, I think, a lot of people say he really isn't going anywhere.
And Norona does not want Dan McKee to be governor. And so if Norona getting into the race creates a three-way race with Foulkes that actually helps McKee, I assume that's part of his calculus.
I would think so.
All right, real quick, got about 2 minutes left. So let's step back from all the job approval numbers and all of that, unless that's what you want to talk about. Is there anything else from the Pell poll that stood out to you, Steph?
Well, there was a question about importance of American identity, and Ted pointed out in his breakdown that older people still felt very strong about their American identity, something of 60% range, and younger people, more like 20%, felt extremely strong about their American identity. And I think that's so interesting. I've noticed that in our polarizing times, that young people aren't really going out to celebrate the 4th of July, right? They're not really thinking of being patriotic as something that's nonpartisan, and it's been associated more with the right. Mm. To be patriotic, to be proud of being American, is becoming more associated with the right. We see the left trying to take that back. They had the No Kings protests and saying,
there's so much push, make sure you have American flags
right,
at those.
Make sure we have American flags too, but you know, you see an American flag in front of someone's house, and I think, especially among young people, they see that as a political opinion. Mm. So that was an interesting thing in the poll, that generation.
I also thought the media consumption numbers were fine. I mean, I was pleased, of course, to see that
bias.
Local TV had, but I will say, and not local TV had the highest plurality, but boy, when you look at those age breakdowns, I think it was like 30% of young people said they're getting some of their news from TikTok regularly, and it's basically negligible with 65 plus people, who more than half still are local TV news. So when you think, especially with the algorithm and what we know about how TikTok can operate, those younger people can be in a very, very different news environment from where those of us who aren't on TikTok might be. I found that interesting.
Unfortunately, Joe, we're out of time. I don't get to ask you what your favorite.
I was just going to say the Washington Bridge. That really stood out. Yeah. No question.
And we already covered that, so that's good. Right. Ted wrote up a great 12 things you need to know from this poll. You can find it on WPRI.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Newsmakers.